Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Well, it's hard to believe, what with all the snow that I encountered this morning and the winds out of the north, but yeah, we're on the doorstep of a brand new baseball season in just a few weeks. But you know, to me, springtime, and yeah, we'll have sunshine and nice temperatures, I'm sure, in the next week or so, but springtime is always the start of new hopes and dreams, and the start of the baseball season in particular always brings a great and wonderful promise. And on today's show, I want to tell you about a new book that was just published by Dan Gray, the owner and founder of Pro Swing Baseball and Softball Training Center up in Mount Kisco and in Portchester. Let's face it, baseball, well, it's the most difficult and most complicated and most frustrating sport for young kids to learn and to play. And Dan's new book, The Youth Baseball Bible, The Definitive Guide to Coaching and Enjoying Youth Baseball, he goes through all the basics and fundamentals of how to teach the game. Now, Dan Gray, he's a proud native of the Bronx. He graduated from the Bronx High School of Science, went on to Binghamton University. He was drafted by the Dodgers in the seventh round, played in the Dodgers organization as a catcher for a number of years. And as you know, loyal listeners of the show know, Dan's been on the Sports Edge several times in the past, and I welcome him back this morning. Dan, how are you doing?
Good morning, Rick. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and I greatly appreciate you putting me on the first show after the time change.
I was just going to apologize to you, Dan. I said, uh-oh, I booked Dan for this daylight saving show. And not only, and by the way, friends, it is in fact 8:07 daylight savings time. But yes, I got Dan on daylight savings Sunday and also on a snowstorm. So thank you for getting up so early. I hope you do have several cups of coffee sitting by you.
Anytime, Rick. I really enjoy speaking and talking baseball with you.
Well, that's of course nice to hear. Now, Dan, I have to tell you this. The first question I have to ask you, and friends, if you've never met Dan Gray, you should know this. He's a big, big guy. He's the essence of a strong catcher. But Dan, you write in the book that, which I didn't know, in high school, you were a middle infielder until your senior year. Is that correct?
Yeah, I really was more of a shortstop, second baseman. And it's, you know, I don't know if your listeners know, Jorge Posada was the same thing. I think he was drafted as a second baseman by the Yankees and then converted to a catcher. But I remember my high school coach telling me, if you want to play in college, and again, this is going back many years, Rick, as we're getting older, but my high school coach said to me, if you want to play in college, you either have to be a left-handed pitcher or a catcher, and considering you throw righty, the first one's out. So you might as well get behind the plate and have a better chance of making a roster.
And at that point, I mean, did you ever consider being a catcher before?
Well, what I enjoyed very quickly was the mental aspect of it.
Yep.
The game within the game on trying to figure out how to get hitters out or try to bring the most out of the pitching staff. So to me, that right away, as soon as I put the gear on, that was the most enjoyable part to me.
Yeah, I've heard that before. I have never caught in a baseball game, but I know a lot of catchers, obviously, especially the catchers that go on, like a Joe Girardi, who was obviously so impressed with your book that he gave you a wonderful blurb, a wonderful endorsement. But a lot of catchers say they like that mental side because they feel like they're in control of all the players on the field. So I understand for somebody who's cerebral like yourself, it's a very appealing position.
Well, it's kind of tough to like the physical side of it, right? You're coming up and down, you're going down the block, you're taking foul tips constantly. So I remember one of my catching instructors telling me, when you have a long minor league season, which you've gone through personally yourself, it's really for the catcher the first 10 games where you feel 100%. After that, you're going to be nicked up, and you're going to be bruised, and you're going to be sore for the remainder of the season.
Well, let's talk about this book, and obviously this is the culmination of all your years. Now, you opened up Pro Swing Baseball and Softball back in 2002, I believe, and you and your staff have worked with literally thousands of aspiring ball players over the years. Dan, what is, in your opinion, what's the most difficult skill to teach? Is it hitting? Is it pitching? Fielding? What do you think, in all the years you've been doing this, what's the most difficult skill to teach the kids these days?
Oh, I think by far, Rick, it's hitting. I don't think there's a question. When you have a reactionary function on a ball moving and you're not sure what the speed is or what the location's going to be, and as you know, regardless of the distance, 99.9999% of the population loses the ball about 5 or 7 feet out in front of them, which most people don't understand, because your eyes are not, quick enough to make that adjustment to see the ball to the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's the way we kind of try to teach. It's the most difficult, to me, it's the most difficult aspect of the game, and it's, in my opinion, the most difficult thing to do in sports.
And, I certainly agree with that, and I think obviously athletes from other sports will say, oh, no, it's much more difficult, for example, to learn how to ice skate or to skate backwards in hockey, or it's more difficult to learn how to shoot a three ball in basketball. But clearly, the phrase you use there, the reactive aspect in baseball, and, of course, the concomitant sense that, if you're in a slump and things aren't going your way, it just sort of snowballs, and it's so difficult to sort of keep yourself from panicking as you see your batting average go down and down. It is really something. I mean, Bart Giamatti once said the game is designed to disappoint you, and I think those words were right on target.
Well, listen, you and I both know it's a game of failure, right? You're going to fail a lot more times than you're going to succeed. And one of the best pieces of advice that I ever got from my coach is listen, you're going to fail a lot more than you're going to succeed, and what you do with those failures is really going to dictate, your mechanics will put you in a slump, but your mind will keep you there. And so it's a matter of being able to learn something, whether it's mechanically or from your mindset or from the pattern that the pitcher's presenting to you to try to get you out. It's your job to learn something from that when you're not successful, and then let it go. And, I try to tell all my hitters that. It's very, very similar to a cornerback in football. You have to have a short memory. You learn something from it, you move on, because as you know, when you try to mentally stack those at-bats and it snowballs on you, then it's the definition of a slump. But I learned a lot, obviously, from your book, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. Shameless plug for the host. But
thank you.
It's there is a mental aspect of the game that's a whole different element that your book and things that I've learned over the years and try to instill into my players. That's a very, very difficult aspect to keep the confidence, to be able to believe in the mechanics and trust what you've been doing. It's a very complex process, and that's why, to me, it's the hardest thing to do consistently well.
And let me ask you this, Dan, because obviously, you and I have known each other for many years, and I know you tend to be an old school kind of baseball guy, which of course I am as well. But the game has changed, and I'm wondering, from the fact now that you work with so many young kids, high school kids who are obviously coming up through the ranks, the game has changed, and things that we used to take for granted, whether it's learning how to bunt or to steal bases or getting kids to understand, hit the ball where it's pitched as opposed to trying to always pull the ball, these things we used to work on routinely, but now the game has changed. And I know in your book you go into great detail about teaching kids how to bunt and how to take a lead and so on and so forth. But how is that? How is the game, and it's changing with analytics, how has that influenced you at all in terms of, and your staff, with teaching kids today how to play baseball?
Well, just that, Rick. I mean, it's changed the teaching style, and that's why, you know as well as I do, from pro ball, there's a trickle-down effect to college and then back down to high school and so on and so forth. So the teaching component of what coaches are doing now, there's no emphasis on that part of the game, whether it's hit and run or having productive outs or bunting. It's just not taught anymore, and quite frankly, it's not glamorized. You and I are not getting on SportsCenter if we set up the winning run by putting down a successful sack bunt. We're not going to make SportsCenter. Quick, interesting story, Rick. I had a current major league player who was in my facility a couple of months ago during the off season, and he said to me that many of his teammates, now this is in the big leagues now, many of his teammates will come back to the dugout with a man on third and hit a fly ball that's a sack fly that scores a run,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be quite annoyed. And some of them will get a talking to by the hitting coach based on the fact that it's not helping their OPS. And what does that translate into? Not helping your OPS is a major factor in your next contract in compiling numbers to kind of be able to negotiate to earn a better contract. So that's, unfortunately, in many ways for me, that's one of the ways the game has kind of changed for the worse. That's a big element. You know, when you and I used to do that many years ago, you would be praised when you came into the dugout for making sure that run got in and you scored a run for your team.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really work that way anymore.
I remember with my years coaching with the Indians and how much, this is going back to the 90s, how much they stressed situational hitting with a man on third base with less than two outs and how essential it was either to get a sack fly or put the ball into play. And, these days, of course, kids, well, strikeout is the same as a ground out or is the same as a pop-up. So what's the difference? And as it sort of makes my jaw drop as to how we've gotten to this point. But that's the mentality that any baseball instructor these days, any coach has to understand and sort of cope with.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. You and I live in Yankee and Met country, right? But, to me, when people talk to me about, what happened this past year in the Major League Baseball season, the reason the Red Sox won the World Series is they had the most complete hitters, a number of them in their lineup. They were the most complete hitters that really played the game. It wasn't just about power numbers. It was about two-strike hitting approach. It was about getting guys over when you needed to. It was about getting guys in when you needed to with productive outs.
Yeah.
So when people talk to me about that, it was listen, they were built, yes, with all those analytics and with launch angle and ball exit velocity and all of that stuff in mind, but there was still an element that connected them to the old school type of play that, it was okay to, be able to take a pitch and hit it to the right side of the field and move a guy over or, potentially get yourself a hit to the opposite field to drive a run in. So to me, that's the reason they won the World Series.
Yeah, I think everybody, I agree with that as well, that the Red Sox obviously had those guys, as you described, were much better, more well-rounded as hitters and getting on base. Hey, my guest this morning is Dan Gray, a pro swing baseball and softball training center up in Westchester County. He's got a new book out, which I heartily endorse. It's called The Youth Baseball Bible. Let me take a break. John Minko has your update. When I return with Dan, we'll go right to your calls at 1-877-337-6666. And back here on the Sports Edge this morning, the correct time is 8:21 daylight savings time. We're talking with Dan Gray of Pro Swing Baseball and Softball, and we're talking about his new book, The Youth Baseball Bible. And we're taking your calls at 1-877-337-6666. And Dan, before I get to the callers, I have to ask you, I know you've worked with a number of top high school and college prospects over the years. For example, Colin Moran, who obviously is one of the all-time greats. Tell me about Colin and his approach to the game and how he went to Iona Prep, correct?
Yes, he did.
Tell me about how you work with him and what that was all about and what were you impressed with Colin's work attitude and approach to perfecting his game?
Well, it was, the the most fun for me was to watch him grow and develop. But everything was done really simply with his approach, Rick. And again, with younger hitters, this is I used to hit with Colin when he was 4 or 5 years old, when his brother Brian, who was a few years older, I was working with him at the same time. And Colin would be, again, 4 or 5 years old with his little wood bat and want to take swings. But that approach that he had through his younger years when he played for me and then went to Iona Prep and then started at the University of North Carolina, it was a very, very simple approach. It was about trying to get to a very strong hitting position, putting his hands in the strongest launch position possible to kind of get to the hitting zone and do some damage with the ball and use the whole field. But that, you know, his work ethic and you know, the amount of swings that he took and the deliberate focus that he had on getting better was really impressive to watch over many, many years.
Let's get to our callers at 1-877-337-6666 on this cold, gloomy Sunday morning. Let's start with James up in Yorktown. James, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. Wonderful show as always. I wish we had you 2 or 3 hours every Sunday instead of 1 hour. It's not enough.
Thank you.
On this book, it's a wonderful book. Anyone who's coaching already or thinking of getting into coaching or just wants to be a good parent to teach their kid the right way, this is a must-read. Dan hits on all the important points, the fundamentals, which are going away, which is unfortunate. Most people pick ready-made teams now and kids that they think understand the game, and they're mistaken. This is a great book, and I recommend it for everybody.
James, you have a particular question? I think the accolades are wonderful. But
yeah, you guys are talking about numbers and analytics and how the game is changing. Funny story, I coach a 17-year-old team, and every now and then I'm on the phone with college coaches about my players.
Yeah.
And I had a guy call me last week, and we were discussing a player, and he was asking every number in the world, you know, velocity, exit velocity, speed, vertical leap, things I never heard of. And after about a 20-minute conversation, I said, "Coach, that's great, you know, all those things he does. You didn't ask me if he was a good baseball player." And, you know, the guy, he was all quiet. He goes, "Well, I assume if he does all those things, he is." I said, "Well, that's not the case. In this case, it was. The kid's a great baseball player." I said, "But you didn't ask about if he's a good teammate, if he's a good ball player, you know, how he reacts to adversity, how he does against good competition. He just wanted to know what you could do with a stopwatch or a radar gun, and that's what's wrong with the game now."
Yeah, I hear you, James. Thank you for the nice comments and the call this morning. And Dan, that's what we're talking about. I mean, if your game is broken down just to physical components and you don't really get a sense of the overall effect of the player and the player's personality and reacting to adversity, whatever, that sort of goes in the wrong direction. And certainly you must confront this all the time.
Well, listen, Rick. I mean, I believe that was somebody I'm familiar with. I think it was Coach Parada. His son, who by the way is very similar to your son, John, is a middle infielder. Is not going to woe you with the 60 time or any of the analytics that they use now, as far as velocity across the diamond or ball exit velocity when they hit.
Yeah.
But if you watch them, and his son goes to Fordham Prep and is going to take his talents to Tufts University to play. So when you watch these guys on a consistent basis, that's why I don't think the scouting element of baseball will ever leave, because there's still value, as there should be, on the eye test and being able to see a guy and what he brings on a daily basis. And that's important, but unfortunately in the recruiting process, with budgets being cut and for, you know, staffs being kind of shorthanded, kids are getting left out of being able to slot in where they should be, because the coaches are not really, and the recruiters are not getting a chance to really see these guys multiple times and what they bring to a team and what they bring to a program. And again, you know, Mr. Parada's son's a great example, as is your son John. Well, as your son John was.
Yeah, it's. I remember when I was coaching at Mercy, and let's face it, the high school baseball season runs at the same time as the college baseball season. And if you want to go out and actually, as you say, get some eye tests to see these kids perform, I remember I did all my recruiting during the summertime, because that's when the kids were out playing ball with summer leagues and what have you. And that's when it should be done. You can rely to a certain degree upon video stuff, highlight reels, but you really got to see the kid play in person to get a sense of just how good and his talents may be. Let's continue on. Let's go to Long Island. Scott is standing by. Scott, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hello, Rick. Thanks for doing your show. I've never been motivated to call, although I have listened, and I'm a school guy, and I played baseball with my buddy Danny Gray at Binghamton a number of years ago.
Okay. That's great.
Is this Scott Burson?
This is Scotty Burson.
How are you, buddy?
Good, good. Good to speak to you. It's great to listen to you. I followed you a little bit, Danny, from a distance. Rick, when I left school, Danny was getting drafted. I went to law school, and then I got into schools. I haven't coached in a long time. I'm on the administrative side now.
Uh-huh.
But I do follow Danny's action. And, you know, as I'm listening, if you want to talk about something real, Danny, a lot of our coaches are talking about how the millennials' attitude is different. And to me, kids are kids always. What do you think on that? Are you seeing anything real different lately?
Well, I think, listen, it's difficult in this generation to try to, we all know it, and Scott, I'm sure you deal with it on the administrative side, whether it's the kids or the parents. They are what they are, and they've always kind of been the same. I'm in the same boat you are. But there are differences based on, the generation, and I think it's really more based on what we need to do as teachers and coaches to try to deal with what we know these kids are now bringing us. So, you know, I talk about it in the book a little bit, trying to create and cultivate a team culture that kind of includes enjoyment, positivity, and has kind of more of a consistent focus on development. And I think that if coaches kind of take that mentality, they won't be disappointed or any entity of the process won't be disappointed in what the result is, and everyone will enjoy the experience. I think Scott and Rick, I think you would agree with me too, because you and I have coached most of our adult lives, is that when you're dealing in a youth sport and it's not just baseball, you need all three facets, and I mean the players, the coaches, and the parents pulling on the rope the same way. If that's not happening, you're destined to be disappointed. Somebody's destined to be disappointed at the end of a season or a series of seasons if you're trying to keep a team together, because it's just not going to work. Everybody's got to be pulling on the rope the same way.
Couldn't agree more.
And I was just going to say it's not easy to get there. And those folks listening, especially up in the Westchester area, knowing Danny for over 30 years, he's as smart as he sounds, and he's as great an athlete as anyone ever was. So if you're thinking about getting some instruction, Pro Swing is the place to go, folks. Danny, great to speak to you. I hope your family's well, and I miss you. Miss the days, right?
I appreciate it, Scott, and the check is in the mail, buddy. Appreciate it.
Rick, you take care as well. Keep doing your good work.
Okay, thank you, Scott. That's a nice call, Dan. And you mentioned about those three components. I want to ask you, because Scott mentioned about the millennial attitude and how that's now sort of pervaded into the world of young athletes. You know, you're in the mix every day with this stuff, and parents, I'm sure, I mean, it must be difficult a time for you and your staff to cope or deal with parental expectations when the kid is 13 or 14 years old and the parents are thinking this kid is on the fast track to play for the Mets or the Yankees, and you're sort of saying, you know, this kid will have a hard time just making his high school varsity team. How do you work in terms of your interaction with the parents, when dealing or trying to sort of get them to, you know, look at the reality or the realistic expectations for their kids?
Well, that's exactly right, Rick. I mean, you know, with those three facets in the team environment, with the players, it's about starting to build a foundation on how to improve your skill set using some of the techniques and drills that are kind of outlined in the book. For the coaches, I just described it, talking with you and Scott about the culture that should be created. For parents, it's just what you said. It's trying to build realistic expectation levels. And with that, you know, there's a couple of things that go into it. A is asking yourself the question as a parent, what's the purpose of my son or daughter playing this sport? And the second piece of it is defining, recognizing, and embracing what your role as a parent within that team environment should be. And we kind of go into it a little bit in the book as well. But that's really what it's about. And you know, like you said earlier, we've known each other a long time. I'm a very, very honest, transparent guy. And a lot of times it's gotten me in trouble when you try to be honest with parents and say, listen, the best thing for your son is to be here moving forward, because it's going to be the best place for his development and his confidence. And that's not always an easy conversation to have, because the parent is not really always on the same page.
Yeah, and that's the hard and cold reality of it. But, of course, the other side, the kids themselves, the players themselves, by the time they're 13 or 14, they know, they can see the landscape for themselves. And despite what the mom or dad is bringing to the table, the kids can see, you know, hey, I'm good, but I'm not as good as that kid is, and they understand the competitive aspect of the sport. And my guest today is Dan Gray. He's got a new book out called The Youth Baseball Bible. You can order it and get a copy right away from Amazon, either in trade paper format or in Kindle. It's $17.99. It's, again, very readable. It's a lot of photos. I highly recommend it, as does Joe Girardi and Bernie Williams, among many others. Dan, let's continue with our calls. Let's go to Jason up in Connecticut. Jason, hi there. You're on the Fan.
How you doing? Good morning.
Good, Jason.
I played high school ball, and then I coached high school ball for 15 years.
Yep.
I prided myself on the mental side of coaching. I turned my left-handed son into a catcher so he would learn the mental side of the game. Now he's going to transition as he's older into a first baseman or outfielder, because obviously the left-handed aspect will knock him out. You made a comment about how the physical aspect will put you into a slump, but your mental aspect will keep you in there. My son also competes at a high level in archery, had a shoulder injury which knocked him out from practicing for a solid 2 months, went through a growth spurt, all his biomechanics were out of line. So his physical aspect of being able to shoot this bow, and he was ranked number 6 in the country at one time, then his mind went into a slump. So when you get an athlete in a slump, what would you work on first to get him out of that slump? Do you try to get that physical aspect back so the mind can come back up with it and he's happy with how he's performing? Or do you work on the mind first and then hopefully the physical comes back?
Well, that's a great question, Jason. But to me, they go hand in hand. And again, I'm sure your son's been through it in baseball. I know Rick and I have been through it in the game. Without a doubt, there's going to be times where you're having trouble figuring out, you know, how to get out of the little funk that you might be in. The key is to try to figure out how to not make it an extended, you know, slump where you wind up being, you know, 2 for 20 or 3 for 30. And again, that's the difficult part. So I work them hand in hand. You go back to, again, what made Colin so successful younger was trying to keep a simple approach on the mechanical side. And at the same time, while you're bringing them back to that, to the simple foundation that they're basing their swing and their approach on, you're rebuilding their confidence. It's a, you know, confidence is a huge thing. Rick talks about it in his book. I talk about it in my book. It's really an important factor. I'll never forget when I was working with Bernie Williams the last 5 or 6 years of his career, he would talk about how he would go into these slumps where he would start diving in with his front foot from the left side and rolling over to the second baseman consistently, and it really affected his confidence. And it was a real eye-opener for me at the time. This is many years ago, obviously, when he was still playing. But when you have a borderline Hall of Famer telling you that, then you know that your 12, 13, 14-year-old kids are going through that probably tenfold. So I think it's a combination of working the physical aspect and getting back to the simplicity of the approach, and then adding that at the same time the mindset of, and this is where the game has gone, and Rick knows this as well, really these guys, you have to keep them aggressive. You know, there's a lot of first pitch swinging in baseball nowadays. It's different than when Rick and I played, and I'm sure you as well, Jason. You're not trying to hang around in the count and work the pitch count up or that kind of stuff. It's not the way the hitters are taught anymore. So you try to also, you know, you want it to be a controlled aggressiveness where they're not just swinging at everything, but you want them to stay aggressive and work themselves out of the slump.
Now, is that you think that's good or bad with that new approach? I'm 43. I'm still a small ball guy, and I've coached with guys who have the same mentality, but then I've gotten a lot of guys that, no, let him hit. If we're down a run in the fifth in high school ball in Connecticut, we play 7 innings. If we're down a run, our leadoff guy's on, bunt him over. And they think, no, just let him swing. And I love the small ball. I mean, I yell at the TV all the time, at the TV all the time. There was I think Didi went to square up to bunt one time, and he's getting yelled at no from the dugout. And it's like on his own, he's going to drop the button.
Jason, let me jump in here because I'm looking up at the clock and I take a break. But, yeah, as Dan will tell you, the game has changed. And, you know, small ball has become almost, extinct these days. It's just not done. And, Jason, thank you for your call this morning. Dan, let me take a pause here. We're talking with Dan Gray, the author of the Youth Baseball Bible, which you can get on Amazon, either in trade paper format or as a Kindle. We're going to take a timeout. When I return, we'll go right back to your calls at 1-877-337-6666. Hey, don't forget, at 9 o'clock this morning, and by the way, the correct time right now is 8:42, Daylight Savings Time. At 9, Ed Randall will be by, and he'll be talking baseball. And I haven't had a chance to chat with Ed this week, but I know, and I'm curious to get his thoughts and reaction about these new proposed changes that they're going to experiment with this spring and this summer in the Atlantic League. Atlantic League's like a AAA independent league. But they're going to do all these unbelievably, well, I don't know, I guess the word is controversial, changes to, I guess, improve, quote-unquote, the game of baseball. They're going to use a robo-ump, meaning they're going to use track men to call balls and strikes instead of umpires. They're going to push the mound back to 62 feet, 6 inches, I guess in an attempt to make it easier to hit. They're going to get rid of infielder shifts. They're going to implement a three batter minimum appearance for relievers. It goes on and on. It's really going to be unusual. And again, it's going to start in the Atlantic League this spring and summer. So we'll see what's in store with that as they try to improve, and I put that in quotation marks, the game of baseball. My guest right now is Dan Gray, the founder and owner of Pro Swing Baseball and Softball Training Center in Mount Kisco in Portchester. We're talking about his new book, The Youth Baseball Bible. And as advertised, Dan, let's get right back to our calls. Let's go to Ed Ward over in Elizabeth. Ed, good morning. You're on the fan.
This is a great topic for me to talk about. I am so old school with baseball. All these changes are ruining the game. But you know what's amazing? We just lost a great coach, and I'm sure you're aware of it, Rick. Fred Hill passed away, the legendary baseball coach at Rutgers University.
Yes, I'm well aware of that, yes.
And he was one of the best in the country at teaching the game of baseball with the fundamentals, doing things the right way and all that stuff.
Yep.
So I know we've had conversations about this. He wasn't happy. But it was interesting. I was at a college baseball game yesterday, so Rambo College playing St. Joe's from Brooklyn. And it was great to see hit and run, slashing, safety squeezing, with the way the game should be played and all that stuff.
Right.
And I know it's crazy the way the game is changing with the analytics and launch angles and all that stuff. I feel it's just ruining the game. And, you know, Dan brought up that great point. The guy was upset because he had a sacrifice fly. Well, when you're an old-school coach, you're happy with that. You're happy hitting behind a runner. You're happy when the infield back hit a ground ball, trading out for a run and all that. But the way the game is changing, I actually feel it's actually ruining the game.
Well, Ed, there's a lot of people who feel the same way, and thank you, as always, for the call. Dan, I know how you feel about this. I'm not sure if you feel it's being ruined, but certainly it's being changed, that's for sure.
Well, Rick, another quick story. I have a couple of kids who pitch up at your alma mater at Harvard, and they came in before they went back up for the season this winter, and they were telling me that you can just imagine at your alma mater how advanced this is. They were talking about a few of the kids that are studying the analytics of the game, and they said that in the next 5 years or so, there's really going to be three outcomes per hitter: a walk, a strikeout, or a home run. I mean, so if everybody is excited and happy about that, then fantastic. But I'm not sure that, as you said in quotes, it improves the game, in the long run.
Let's go to another old school guy. Let's go to Jack Smithlin over in Fairlawn. Jack, I'm sure you concur with all that. These changes they're going to run in the Atlantic League is not going to necessarily improve the game of baseball.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. First of all, I just want to let you know that Scout's very upset with you, so just
Oh, your dog?
Understand that. Oh, boy. You know, I woke him up. Now it's 2 hours early this morning. So, Dan, I understand what you're talking about, too, with this hour early stuff. So. But once again, Zach played in the Atlantic League, you know, and, you know, those are the places, to, I guess, to experiment. But you know what? Talking back, I always wanted to write a book, and Rick knows this, Dan, and the name of my book was going to be It's All in the Head Hitting. And the funny thing about it is we don't watch kids play the game. Like, when I go to watch a game, I watch the way they cut the corner at first, heading in that straight line to second, where the cutoffs are going. You know, it's not just about the hitting and about, you know, the home runs and everything. The old school baseball is old school, you know. It's what we taught, and it's not being taught enough. But getting back to the parent thing and the success level on how baseball actually teaches failure more than it teaches success. But one of the things I used to do with my hitters is every time they got up and hit the ball hard, I put a green dot next to that at bat. And when a kid came to me and goes, "Coach, I'm 0 for 21," you know, what I did is I changed the definition of success. Most coaches think success is getting on base, getting base hits, your batting average being high. It's not about that. It's about, like you talked about before, about putting the ball to right field to move that runner to third base instead of second base, things like that. So every time that a kid hit a ball hard, I put a little green dot. And I said, "You know what? In my eyes, you're very successful. But I'm 0 for 20. I said, "Well, look at this. Out of your last 20 at-bats, you hit the ball hard 13 times. That's success."
Yeah.
So don't be so concerned with the batting averages and your RBIs. You know, watch the player play, like you guys said before. And, Rick, like we said, you know, we are old school. And one of the things that I do in most of my lessons now is I teach bunting. I teach how to put the ball down for a base hit and for a sacrifice, and understanding that if you're going to fail, you know, fail with success.
Well,
put
Jack,
the ball in play. Bunt the ball.
You know, and Jack, yeah, thank you as always for your
you're
good
more
comments.
Than welcome, Rick.
Thank you, Jack. And Dan, you know, I'm curious, when the kids come to you today, you know, young kids, middle school, high school, do you teach them about hitting and running and hitting the ball behind the runner at second base? Do you teach them those fundamentals? I mean, is that still being taught? Or is it something that just, well, you know, the kids aren't going to respond to it. So is that just gone by the boards?
Well, it, for the most part, Rick, it has. I mean, I try and I think you and I are what I call transitional guys, meaning we're trying to keep a connection between the old school values and ways of the game that Jack just talked about,
yeah,
and what is going to allow these kids to be successful from an evaluation standpoint for, again, what's important and valued in the game today. So it's not specifically talking about, hey, the hit and run or the get them over or get them in, but about, again, a mindset of taking a good approach, being selective and definitive in an attack zone, your attack zone that you can drive a ball, and then just try to backspin that ball and hit it hard somewhere. I mean, that's, you know, again, as Jack talked about, trying to have a quality at-bat doing that. Again, there's a little bit of a different definition for that as far as a quality at-bat now than when you and I played. Again, a lot of times it's first or second pitch, but if you can get a kid to try to stay in a specific zone where he can barrel up the ball and backspin it, you've kind of done your job. It's unfortunate, but this showcase era that's prevalent now and has been for the last 15 years or so, again, there's not a lot of value placed on the things that you and Jack talked about as far as on the defensive side or the offensive side.
Yeah, and that's exactly what has been taking place, as you point out. You know, the showcase mentality is the kids come in for a weekend or so. They're evaluated in terms of their speed, arm strength, power at the plate, that kind of stuff. But there isn't really much in terms of getting a sense of how the youngster actually plays the game in terms on a pitch-by-pitch situation. It's just like, okay, well, the numbers look good, so therefore he must be a good baseball player.
And yes. Yeah. And Rick, not to interrupt, but that, you know, again, when you're going to these different tournaments and showcases, you know, this is why you have, for example, team defense, you have outfielders that don't know how to play the fence or the wall, or don't know really the value and use of cutoff men, because a lot of times you can't take infield, outfield as a coach. You're running on the field at the end of a field. Your game is being timed. You've got all these people that are watching your players from behind home plate. And again, I think the little parts of the game, the finer nuances and points that the callers have talked about, they get overlooked and undervalued.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned, the smaller parts of the game, which are so essential, again, just a personal observation, and this is just anecdotal. It's not something I can point to in terms of a survey or research. But it seems in recent years, Dan, that kids today in high school have a particularly difficult time in catching fly balls. That if it's windy that day or there's a high sky, you know, with the sun, it's like an adventure for them. Whereas when you were growing up or I was growing up, and pretty much catching a fly ball was pretty easy. But nowadays it seems like that the whole generation hasn't learned how to master that skill.
Well, again, I just don't think there's a lot of emphasis and value put on it. You know, there's people are worried about, you know, trying to get the guys on the mound that can throw with higher velocity, and they're worried about the power numbers on the offensive side. And again, I just don't think there's a lot of time spent on those kind of things. On, you know, you were a middle infielder, the value of learning your partner on the other side of the bag to try to get comfortable in turning double plays, or again, outfielders working together and communicating. Again, I think those are aspects of the game that you know, people, coaches, and people that are in the game just don't feel that there's time needed and should be spent doing those certain things.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned we're talking about hitting today. And we're talking, of course, with Dan Gray. Talk about the pitching, for example. I mean, the pitchers today, the young kids coming up, we all know about the epidemic of Tommy John surgeries. When you get a kid who's in high school who obviously has some ability, do you talk to him about, you don't have to throw a full max on every pitch. Do you have to actually teach the kids that, to teach them how to pitch? What's been your experience with young high school pitchers?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, first and foremost, you know, you try to teach the kids that the most important part, and again, the book is really based on 8 and 9 year olds to 12 year olds on what you and I would consider the modified field.
Yep.
The real focus should be on trying to pound the strike zone through creating an efficient, consistent delivery on release points so that you can do that. And, you know, it's very difficult nowadays when you have all the radar guns and you know, spin rate and all that stuff, to try to keep those kids focused on the point that most of the guys, even in the big leagues, as they get older, and you can look at CC Sabathia or Justin Verlander, these guys that used to throw 98 and 99 that can't do that anymore, and they wind up later in life learning to figure out how to pitch. And I feel like part of my job in what I do is to try to get those kids to understand that earlier.
Yeah, I think that's something that unfortunately may be lost in the shuffle as kids try to say, well, the only way I'll get a college scholarship or get some attention from a pro scout is by throwing 90 miles per hour, even though you're going to end up perhaps, you know, having serious arm injuries because your body is still developing when you're in your teenage years. It's a real concern, and again, that's throwing. That's not pitching. That's just throwing. I'm glad to hear, obviously, that you're working with these kids and trying to teach them the value of learning how to throw strikes and, obviously, of changing speeds.
Rick, real quick, I there was somebody threw a stat at me the other day that last year in the minor leagues, in Double A, there were about 66 kids that touched 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can see, again, what the emphasis has become, and quite frankly, getting back to the hitting side, you know, when you have that approach of trying to create more power and launch angle, and you get the longer approaches to the hitting zone, you know, that it becomes more difficult to hit that added velocity. So, you know, part of me understands it based on what's going on the offensive side, but like you said, I mean, there should be a value that is connected to keeping these kids understanding how to use their secondary pitches and how to learn to use the different quadrants of the strike zone.
The title of the book is The Youth Baseball Bible, The Definitive Guide to Coaching and Enjoying Youth Baseball. It's by Dan Gray, who runs a pro swing baseball and softball training center in Mount Kisco and in Portchester. It is a very smart book, particularly for kids just getting involved in the game, parents and coaches who want to know how to teach the game the right way. It's got all sorts of wonderful endorsements from Bernie Williams, Joe Girardi. Dan's the real deal. As you heard him this morning, he knows exactly what he's talking about. A very, very bright, intelligent fellow when it comes to the game of baseball. Dan, my thanks as always, and hopefully we'll talk to you again real soon down the line.
I hope so, Rick. Thanks again. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Dan. Again, that's Dan Gray, Youth Baseball Bible. Okay, let me take a timeout. I'll be back with more. Stay with me.
Radio.com.
Well, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. Yeah, I know I'm an old-school baseball guy, but I fully understand and acknowledge that the game of baseball is obviously going to change. We'll see if it's for the better or for the worse. My thanks this morning to Pete Kennedy. Stick around for Ed Randall. He's up next. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.